All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are getting your in-depth scouting report of the newest Falcon in tight end out of Florida, Kyle Pitts, where I will be breaking down his strengths, weaknesses, and his NFL potential.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP. Still going strong, however, on Twitter at FalcFans. And, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's Locked On Falcons podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. So today's Locked On Falcons podcast is Locked On Kyle Pitts, and we will begin 3 days of exclusive Kyle Pitts content here on the Locked On Falcons podcast, kicking things off with my scouting report, and we will be entirely focused on Kyle Pitts for the next 3 days leading up until, you know, Thursday's episode, where we'll be talking about the schedule that comes out later this week. But this is not going to be the only time we get to talk about Kyle Pitts. It's not as if, you know, you got 72 hours of Kyle Pitts content and then never again for the next 72 days. Obviously, we're going to have a lot of Kyle Pitts content coming up on this podcast for the ensuing, you know, 72 years, if all things go according to plan, or 7.2 years, I guess is probably more accurate. But today's episode is our scouting report, and longtime listeners of the Locked On Falcons podcast know that I have done this consistently with the last three draft classes, and we'll do this with all nine picks in this upcoming draft class, breaking down players' strengths and weaknesses, which you can generally get anywhere, but I think really what makes my scouting reports a little bit more unique than others is that I do floor, ceilings, and eye level. And for me, a floor is what I think a player is going to be day one in the NFL. This is not projecting what he's going to be at a minimum 3 years from now. It is, if there was a football game tomorrow, this is what this player is going to be stepping on the field right away. Then the ceiling is obviously, I think, what the player has the potential to be, what his peak potential is with development. So where he's going to be 3, 5 or more years down the road. And a lot of these comparisons are looking at current NFL players, former NFL players, and sort of the level of production that those guys have had at those highest levels. And for me, what's unique in addition to that floor and ceiling assessment is I look at eye level. And that's basically the halfway in between the floor and the ceiling. And 20 years of experience has taught me that more often than not, that sort of assessment of sort of what's halfway between a guy's floor, what's halfway between a guy's peak potential is going to be what he is in the NFL more often than not, is the most accurate projection of what a player is going to be. Because I think there is a tendency for people to, particularly when it comes to draft picks, overly focus on a guy's ceiling. And it's like, look, we got to understand what he is coming into the league at that floor level, and then really what's realistic for what he's going to be in the NFL with some development, but maybe not sort of the peak development where all the boxes are checked and that would allow that player to hit his ceiling. So, you know, Kyle Pitts, relative to a lot of these players that I've consistently done this type of breakdowns and on the podcast, I've been doing them since the 2018 draft, formerly at FalcFans.com. I used to do that on the website and really kind of started doing this type of analysis with each of the Falcons draft picks, starting with that 2014 draft. But I can certainly say over the last, you know, 8 drafts, Kyle Pitts is relatively unique that his ceiling is going to be very high. His floor is going to be much higher than any player's floor that I have broken down over these last 7-8 years as well. So we'll get exactly into that. But let's talk about the strengths of Kyle Pitts, starting things off. His size, his speed, his length certainly stand out. The 83 3/8-inch wingspan is 98th percentile among pass catchers, would be 90th percentile if he was an offensive tackle or pass rusher. And I think that's part of the reason why Kyle Pitts is a sort of generational unicorn, is because you talk about the fact that he's a tight end. I think is relatively unique, because when we look at players that are built like him in a lot of ways, he played defensive end, he played tight end in high school, was I think 235 coming out of high school based off of the various recruiting websites. And you kind of see this with former Falcons like Jamal Anderson and Rashid Hageman, both players that were, you know, Anderson was a wide receiver, a 210-pound wide receiver coming out of high school. Rashid Hageman was like a 250-pound tight end coming out of high school. And those guys were flipped to the defensive side of the ball given their size, their athleticism, and their length. And we saw Anderson wind up becoming a 280-pound defensive end at Arkansas. And, you know, Hageman became a 310-pound defensive tackle. And I think that's why Kyle Pitts is so rare, because normally a guy with his physical tools and physical traits, you know, he would have gone to a different school, you know, instead of Florida, and they would have said, okay, we're going to make you into a pass rusher, and we're going to put, you know, 30, 40, 50 pounds on you, and we're going to make you into this, you know, Julius Peppers or whatever type of elite athletic pass rusher. And so, you know, the types of players that he is, you know, typically those guys typically stay as wide receivers, and sort of you're like, okay, we're not going to make you into a tight end like we saw with guys like Vincent Jackson, or more recently a guy like Hakeem Butler, who similarly had similar physical tools that Kyle Pitts has, or they get flipped to the defensive side of the ball like a Brian Burns or a Montez Sweat, who are similar athletic specimens with similar sort of size and frame dimensions as a Kyle Pitts. And so I think that's one of the reasons why he's so rare, is just because normally these guys are either wide receivers or defensive ends, as opposed to sort of, I guess, being stuck in the middle and being more of a tight end prospect. So obviously his unique blend of skills and traits makes him a mismatch problem for offenses. He's too fast for linebackers, too quick for safeties, too big for corners. He beat up on some of the top SEC defensive backs and corners over the last 2 years at Florida. And, you know, guys that have gone on to be first round picks or will go on to be first round picks, guys like Noah Igbinoghene out of Auburn, Grant Delpert and Derek Stingley out of LSU, Kelvin Joseph from Kentucky, J.C. Horn, South Carolina, Patrick Surtain, Alabama, Eric Stokes, Georgia, etc. And teams were constantly putting corners on him because they knew that linebackers stood no chance matching up with him. And he can line up anywhere, plenty of experience playing in line as that Y tight end, or split out wide as a wide receiver, flexed out in the slot as a F tight end. He's not one of those guys that's basically a slot receiver that you see often in today's college football, where a lot of these spread teams basically just have a tight end. You know, Mark Andrews was one of those players at Oklahoma playing in that system, was basically a slot receiver full time and rarely lined up in line. You know, according to Pro Football Focus, in both years as a starter at Florida, over 60% of his snaps were spent as an inline tight end. 20% were spent in the slot, which means about 16% left over for the most part was presumably him being split out wide as a true wide receiver. And, you know, I thought he really improved his hands from his sophomore year to his junior year, from 2019 to 2020, going on, depending on your source, having four drops in 2019. I charted six watching his 2019 targets, to zero drops this past year in 2020. And that's where his catch radius, his strong hands come into play. You know, when it comes to body control, the ability to track the ball in the air and make adjustments midair and be able to, you know, twist his body to be able to get his feet down inbounds on the sideline, et cetera. You know, he's among the best I've ever seen. Larry Fitzgerald's probably the best I've ever seen in terms of ball tracking, ball skills, winning in the air. You know, if Larry Fitzgerald is a 10 out of 10 in that regard, I think Kyle Pitts is probably like a 9 out of 10 in that regard. So certainly definitely elite, but maybe not the best I've ever seen. But, you know, we're comparing him to a first ballot Hall of Famer in that regard, in terms of being slightly a notch or two below that guy. When it comes to the red zone, basically you throw it up in the end zone, he's going to come down with it almost every time. You know, that was an area of improvement from 2019-2020, charting his red zone targets. In 2019, he was very good in the red zone, 14 targets, caught 9 of them, scored on 5 of them. On the 5 that he did not catch, 2 of them were uncatchable, 1 was dropped, and 3 were broken up, with that one drop being a time where Grant Delpit put a hit on him and separated him from the ball before he could secure it, and charting that as a drop. And, you know, those would be very good red zone numbers for an NFL tight end. But in 2020, you looked at his red zone targets, 16 red zone targets, scored on 8 of them, had 9 completions. And I distinguish completions because of the 7 incompletions, 2 of them were broken up by a defender, 3 were uncatchable. And the 2 of them he actually caught, but he was out of bounds because he couldn't get his foot in bounds because Kyle Trask was a little off target on the throw. So basically, of the 13 catchable red zone targets he had this past year in 2020, he caught 11 of them, and only 9 of them counted as completions. So you look at a 36 36% red zone conversion rate in 2019, going up to 50% in 2020 in terms of the times he was able to score on those targets. And you look at tight ends in the NFL over the past 3 years, only one tight end that has been targeted over 25 times combined over the last 3 years has had a red zone conversion rate of 37% or higher. And guess who that is? Jonnu Smith, playing for Arthur Smith in Tennessee. And the next best guys are guys like Mark Andrews and Eric Ebron at 36%. Austin Hooper's 35%, 32% if you just count his time 2 years in Atlanta, 32% for Travis Kelce, Jared Cook, 34%, Jimmy Graham, 32%. You know, you look at the Falcons wide receivers and tight ends the past 3 years in terms of the red zone conversion rate, Calvin Ridley stands out far away at the top of the list with a 46% conversion rate, which is outstanding for a wide receiver. Hooper, as I mentioned, was 32%, Hayden Hurst 27, Justin Hardy 25, Julio 24, Sanu 22, and Russell Gage 19. And you can instantly see where Pitt provides immediate value for the Falcons offense in the red zone, where the team has been basically lacking these last couple of years outside of Ridley and Hooper in terms of consistently high level production in the red zone. And when you chart Pitts' red zone targets, it's not just simply, oh, he's winning on fades where Kyle Trask or Felipe Franks is just throwing it up and he catches it. You know, a lot of it's posts, slants, out patterns. Only two of the 13 red zone touchdowns over the past 2 years I charted were some sort of fade or lob throw. So you'll often see that pivot route in his highlight package that he had against Kentucky this past year, but you didn't see a lot of those types of routes that he ran very often. You know, he's very capable of running a diverse route tree, but I don't know if he was particularly asked to do that at Florida. You see a guy that when he's asked to run those different routes, he shows the capability of doing that, you know, but a lot of his routes are outs, corners, slants, option routes, the post. He'll run a skinny post, a lot that I call kind of a crossover where he'll sort of fake to the outside and then swim back to the inside like he's crossing up a defender in basketball to get that inside leverage. You know, that's probably the number one route that he ran in different variations of that in a slant and a post where he's sort of breaking inside and using his big frame to get leverage is sort of the go-to route that he ran quite a bit at Florida. But I do think his route running is an area that could be improved upon. And we'll talk about some of the other areas, including his blocking, that could get better as we continue today's Kyle Pitts scouting report. But speaking of areas where Kyle Pitts could use a boost, I want to tell you guys about Nugenix, the number one selling free testosterone booster at GNC. And it's offering a complimentary bottle to all football fans in America. To get your complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T, text DRAFT to 231231. This unique man-boosting formula is powered by Testofen, which helps boost free testosterone and total testosterone levels, increase energy and lean muscle mass. And if you're over 40 or like me approaching 40, don't let age get in the way. Get your edge back with Nugenix. Plus, if you text now, they'll include a bottle of Nugenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you get back into shape absolutely free. Text DRAFT to 231231. That's DRAFT, D-R-A-F-T, to 231231. Message and data rates may apply. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action, and there's no time like the month of May to get started at BetOnline. The second leg of the Triple Crown, the Preakness, is later this week. NBA, NHL playoffs, the French Open are all set to begin later this month, and of course, baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. BetOnline gives you all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. And it's not just sports, since BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. Just head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today at betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So we're talking about the areas where Kyle Pitts can improve. Some might call them weaknesses. And again, I think his route tree is fine, but I think if you're expecting him to run this sort of super diverse wide receiver like route tree, you'll probably be mistaken once you watch the film. You know, it's a lot of hitches, curls, crossers, slants, fades, option routes, posts, etc. So he doesn't necessarily run like four routes, but it's sort of, I won't say a basic route tree, but it's not maybe as diverse as you would expect from a wide receiver. But if you look at, say, how the Kansas City Chiefs use Travis Kelce, you see a lot of those same routes. A lot of Kelce's production comes from the fact that he gets some second chance opportunities due to Patrick Mahomes' scrambling ability. And obviously, you're probably not going to see nearly as much of that in Atlanta with Matt Ryan. So I think it's fair to wonder if Pitts will have the same amount of volume that someone like a Kelce gets in Kansas City, especially in recent years with Patrick Mahomes as a quarterback. But then again, we can't sit here and act like Travis Kelce wasn't getting a significantly high volume number of throws when Alex Smith was the quarterback there in Kansas City, was much more of a game manager pocket quarterback that is much more, at least in style, more reminiscent of what Matt Ryan is. So, you know, I don't think the question is going to be whether or not Pitts has the capability of being Kelce-esque for an NFL offense. It's just going to be whether Arthur Smith's offense will allow him to do that, especially when you look at the way that Smith used Jonnu Smith in recent years in Tennessee. A lot of short stuff with Jonnu Smith, outlet throws in the flat over the middle, which Pitts can do and did a lot of that, especially in 2019 at Florida, but that's not really where he shines. For example, on screens, he was not particularly good in Kyle Pitts, who we're talking about. While he can make plays after the catch due to his speed, he's not really a guy that's like that big, massive load that's going to be trucking guys in the open field. You know, I think most NFL safeties will have little to no issue bringing him down the open field. And, you know, I bring this up because I know if Dirk Cutter was still playing, calling plays here, he would dial up a ton of screens for Kyle Pitts, thinking, oh, let me just get the ball into this great athlete's hands. And I don't think that's really where Kyle Pitts shines in a major way. You know, similarly, he's probably not as good in traffic as you would assume, because he doesn't necessarily have elite physicality in that regard, even though he does have this incredible catch radius and body control to extend away from his body and make these highlight reel grabs with defenders nearby. You know, when it comes to a defender that is able to get their hands on him and sort of be draped over him, he's not consistently winning in those situations as much as you might assume. And that's where, you know, I think things are interesting because his length, again, extending away from his body makes him unique and different. But once you get in sort of confined spaces and it becomes a matter of positioning himself against the defender and having to catch the ball tight to his body, he becomes a little more ordinary, nothing special in that regard compared to, you know, any other tight end that you would find across the league. And this leads us to the portion of the show where we're going to talk about is blocking. And I think he's probably a better blocker than a lot of people would assume based off of his reputation. He's not going to be one of those guys that just simply gets in the way for like 1 or 2 seconds, like say a Tony Gonzalez was when he was here in Atlanta. You know, I think Kyle Pitts will get after it as a blocker. His long arms, he shows good burst off the line of scrimmage. He'll get into the chest of the defender, get that initial leverage going up even against 270 plus pound defensive ends. And, you know, the effort, that toughness, they're all there. He uses his long arms to get extension and create some push at the line of scrimmage. His biggest issue as a blocker comes from he needs to get better in terms of his footwork. He'll take some false steps, which will prevent him at times from getting initial leverage. Sometimes he'll get unbalanced, overextended. He doesn't also have the bulk that you want or the heft to really maintain those blocks. He'll get that initial leverage and that push. But then when it comes to maintaining a block against a guy that has maybe 20 plus pounds on him, he'll struggle in that regard. And I think the jump in competition will cause probably some problems. Obviously, I watched him go up against someone like a 275 pound guy like Malik Herring out of Georgia, who went undrafted this past year. And, you know, Kyle Pitts is able to get push against that guy, but that's very different from blocking, say, Cam Jordan or Chase Young or Trey Flowers. So I think he's a guy that could use more muscle. Maybe he could get up to 255, and that would definitely help him in that regard. And I don't think he would lose a lot in terms of his speed and pass catching ability if he was to add, you know, 8 to 12 more pounds of bulk on him. You know, but you're not really going to ask him to spend a ton of time as an inline blocker and blocking DEs, so it's not necessarily that important to you. Another area that I do think he could get better as a blocker is locating assignments when he's asked to block on a move, you know, such as when he's asked to block on traps and pulls and leads. You know, he has trouble locating his assignments when he's not necessarily lined up a guy. Like if he's in line and there's like block the guy in front of you, block that edge guy in front of you, he does a good job at that, simplifying his assignments. But when it comes to asking him to block on a move, he has trouble locating those assignments and will whiff on things and doesn't show the same sort of urgency as a blocker when he's asked to sort of pull across the line of scrimmage or climb to the second level that he does as an inline blocker. And I do wonder, given that the zone blocking scheme is much more cerebral when it's asking guys to locate their assignments on the move, because it's not always just sort of block the guy in front of you. That's the difference between zone blocking and man blocking. We won't get into that on today's episode. But I think because of that, his role within the scheme, particularly this upcoming season, might be different than a lot of people were assuming. I think most people would assume, oh, you'll make Hayden Hurst the inline blocking tight end, that Y tight end, and you'll make Pitts more of that H-back or flex tight end, which is the H or the F tight end. But I actually think because of this issue, you're probably better served making Pitts a Y tight end and Hurst the H or the F in this regard. Hurst wasn't really asked to do that a lot last year, but he was effective when he was asked to play more of that H or F role. Shout out to the real Pat Man on Twitter for showcasing some of those plays on his timeline. You know, I think there's a reality when we talk about Kyle Pitts that if he were to go to a run first team, and one wonders if the Falcons will be this team, through coaching, through bulking up, I do think he could turn into one of the better blocking tight ends in the NFL, at least relative to his pass catching ability in terms of the guys that are the starters and the premier pass catchers that aren't necessarily known for their blocking ability. You know, I think he has the capability of being better blocker than, say, guys like Darren Waller, Hayden Hurst, Tony Gonzalez, Zach Ertz, those pass catching tight ends that are underwhelming blockers. He's not going to be Gronk or anything in that regard, but I do think, you know, if a team really wanted him to get there, you know, I think he could get close to that point eventually. I think a lot of his blocking potential just relies on, you know, getting stronger and refining his technique. But obviously the Falcons aren't drafting him that high because they expect him to block. They're drafting him that high because they're expecting him to catch 80 plus passes a year, not because they want him to be a force in the run game. That's just a bonus, if anything. So there are some things that he could refine, but ultimately where he winds up as a pro is going to depend on the creativity of a play caller, the skill level of the quarterback getting him the ball in terms of living up to that 80 plus catch sort of range. And we'll get into sort of that aspect of his game as we wrap up today's Scouting Report podcast, talking about Kyle Pitts' floor, talking about his ceiling and where he projects in the NFL. But speaking of floors and ceilings, how about those Atlanta Hawks? You know, they started off with a really low floor this season, and it seems like that ceiling is keeps inching up more and more, and get more insight on the floor and ceiling of this Atlanta Hawks team and whether or not they could be one of those teams playing for the postseason and how far they could go in the postseason by checking out the Locked On Hawks podcast hosted by Brad Rowland. Or if you're a fan of any other NBA team, of course, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there, and you can find Locked On Hawks or Locked On Celtics or Locked On Bucks or wherever you want to find your daily NBA podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So did you guys know that Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market? Of course you did. Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors. Whether you're a big fan of coconut almond like me because it tastes just like an almond joy, or you prefer mint brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie, salted caramel, coconut, or raspberry, there's something for everyone. And there's also the occasional limited time flavor too. And you can try them all with a mix box, getting 2 each of all 9 flavors, because Built Bars contain 100% real chocolate. They taste just like a candy bar. Again, the coconut almond tastes just like an almond joy. And Built Bars, they're not just tasty, they're healthy too. They're low in sugar, low in calories, high in protein, high in fiber. I'm sure you were scrambling to find mom that perfect gift for Mother's Day. Well, still have an opportunity to get mom that box of Built Bars. Send her a box. You're sure to be her favorite until you get her that next box of Built Bars. All you got to do is head over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. So I think when it comes to projecting tight ends in the NFL, that one of the things I've learned over 2 decades of evaluating players is that the system that a tight end goes to and plays in can mean a lot for a player's potential. Play calling, environment, rather than necessarily skill set, can be the difference between why one guy catches, say, 50 passes and another guy catches, say, 80 passes. A guy can basically pad his numbers running a lot of sort of short and underneath stuff in an offense that includes a lot of dinking and dunking. He may line up tight to the formation. He'll chuck a defensive end, then release in the flat, and the quarterback will throw him the ball, you know, throwing a 2-yard or 3-yard pass in the air. And, you know, that guy will turn upfield, catch it. And then use his ability to try to make that first defender miss. And that will determine if that's a 6 yard gain or a 16 yard gain. And we saw that quite a bit here in Atlanta with Austin Hooper, with Hayden Hurst the past few years. I think Darren Waller has been utilized in that way in a major way in Las Vegas. I think that's how Jonnu Smith was primarily used in Tennessee these past couple of years. And Travis Kelce gets a ton of his production that way. And as I mentioned earlier, Kyle Pitts was utilized a lot in that way in 2019 in Florida. That's why his yards per reception was 12. And then when he was asked to do a lot more vertical stuff in 2020, you saw his yards per reception explode to nearly 18 yards per reception. You know, Darren Waller doesn't run a ton of vertical stuff in Las Vegas compared to some of the other high-end tight ends. But when he does, it's a lot of fades. It's a lot of 50-50 balls. If you're looking for more of that steam splitter up the vertical route tree, you know, Baltimore's usage of Mark Andrews is going to be that type of tight end, and Andrews does an excellent job using his big body to win in the air. And I think Kyle Pitts can do a lot of that same stuff. He's a player that can win in a variety of ways. You can use him like Waller or Kelce or Andrews or Hooper or Hurst or Jonnu Smith, and that's his versatility is key. And how the Falcons utilize Kyle Pitts, I think, will determine his level of production here. If Arthur Smith's vision for him is basically a taller, more athletic version of Jonnu Smith, his production probably tops out around like 60, 70 catches a year. And while that's still a very good level for an NFL tight end, TJ Hockenson finished fourth in the NFL this past year among tight ends with 67 catches. But being the type of tight end that catches, you know, 90 to 100 passes a year, which is normally what we think about when we think about the elite tight ends, the Tony Gonzalez's, Jason Witten, Gronk, Jimmy Graham, Darren Waller, Travis Kelce that we've seen in recent years, you know, that's going to take a little bit more effort. That's going to require him being a much more significant part of your offense, and frankly, the offense to revolve around him a lot more. And I think Pitts definitely has the capability of being that type of player, and it'll just be on Arthur Smith to try and get him the ball and get that type of player out of him. So I think the floor for what Kyle Pitts is in the NFL, what he is day one, is what Logan Thomas was for Washington this past year. Thomas caught over 70 passes, and I'm not saying that I expect Kyle Pitts to come in right away and have that level of production here in 2021 in Atlanta. To me, you know, given that he's going to have to fight for targets among hopefully Julio Jones, in addition to Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst, and Russell Gage, you know, basically the only way that I see him catching 70 passes this year is if the Falcons are dealing with substantial injuries to the wide receiver core, or, you know, Matt Ryan dropping back and throwing the ball 700 times this year, which I can think we all can agree is less than ideal for that scenario. So not putting the 70 catch expectation on Kyle Pitts in year one in terms of his production. But I think if he was in an environment similar to what Logan Thomas found himself in Washington last year, where that was a situation where if the ball wasn't going to Terry McLaurin or a check down to J.D. McKissick, you know, Logan Thomas was essentially the number two receiver in Washington last year. And I do think in that sort of environment, Kyle Pitts could be that almost immediately. Thomas, for those that don't know, is a former quarterback at Virginia Tech. Great athlete. Is not much of a blocker. Spends the bulk of his time in Washington flexed out as more of a slot receiver than necessarily inline tight end. According to Pro Football Focus, only about 30% of his snaps last year came as an inline tight end. I think Pitts is a much more refined route runner than Thomas is, has better hands, etc. So from an ability standpoint, I think his floor is like Logan Thomas plus. If Pitts doesn't necessarily improve from this point on in time, you know, I think that's what he basically is, which is an oversized athletic wide receiver like Logan Thomas is. If he was going to an offense that would ask him to play a lot more in line, then I think Noah Fant would be a good comp for where his floor is. Noah Fant spent 85% of his snaps as an inline tight end, according to Pro Football Focus, caught 60 plus passes as the number two guy, thanks to the injury to Courtland Sutton last year in Denver. And let's be clear, I am prematurely judging Noah Fant, because I think the player that Fant is going to grow into over the next, say, 3 years is going to be much better than what he has been these last 2 years in Denver. But I'm just talking about sort of as a floor is concerned, I'm talking what exactly what Noah Fant is today. I think Kyle Pitts can be that player day one in the NFL given the right opportunity. So when we're talking about all these tight ends and how much time they spent in line, if you're curious, in 2019, Jonnu Smith spent 80% of his snaps as an inline tight end in Tennessee, and then 71% this past year in 2020. You know, Anthony Firkser, who's been the predominant number two tight end over the past 2 years, was about 35% of his snaps in line. So my guess is that we'll see a lot more of Pitts flexed out and lined up as an H-back as a rookie, going back against what I said earlier, where I think maybe the best usage of him would be more of that inline guy and Hayden Hurst being more of that flex guy. But, you know, I do kind of expect the team to start Pitts off in that role. And, you know, 2021 and beyond, maybe spend more time in line. And I'll be curious to see if it's as much as someone like a Jonnu Smith or Noah Fant, you know, 80%+ of his snaps. I think in terms of Kyle Pitts' ceiling, Travis Kelce is the gold standard right now for tight ends. A guy that can be essentially the number one receiver in offense, can line up in multiple ways. You know, the past 2 years, Kelce has spent about 40% of his snaps in line. Prior to Mahomes' arrival in 2017, that was closer to 50 to 60% of his snaps in line. You know, that's a player that at his peak can be a dominant pass catcher, all three levels, underneath, intermediate, deep threat. Is a guy that's dangerous after the catch, one of the most productive red zone threats in the game at the tight end position, and also, in Kelce's case, a fairly solid run blocker. Do I think Kyle Pitts can go beyond that ceiling? Not necessarily in the sense of him being a better player than what Kelce is or has been at his peak. But I think if Pitts does go beyond Kelce, it has more to do with the fact that he's playing at a much younger age. Kelce, you know, has been a very good tight end from the jump in the NFL. And, you know, because of his injury that he had his rookie season, didn't really play as a rookie. So it really was his second year in 2014 where he came on the scene, and he was 25 at that point in time. And then the sort of elite all-pro tight end that we've seen over the past 5 years didn't really show up until he was like age 27 in 2016. Kyle Pitts is going to turn 21 in October. So if he can get to where Travis Kelce was when Kelce was 27 and Kyle Pitts can get there, say, at 23 or 24, obviously the potential longevity of sustaining that beyond the age of 30 means that the production potential that Kyle Pitts could have over his NFL career is extremely high. You know, Kelce is about to be 32 this year, and presumably based off of how he performed last year, you know, it hasn't shown serious signs of slowing down. And obviously age 32 is the same age that Tony Gonzalez was in his final year in Kansas City, which also marked his final 1,000 yard season. And we saw him play until he was 37 here in Atlanta. And so when you imagine, you know, potentially having 8 peak years of production at the Kelce level versus the 5 that we've seen so far from Travis Kelce, when we're talking about Kyle Pitts, and then you imagine maybe the potential of Kyle Pitts sustaining that into his mid 30s, like we've seen with guys like Tony Gonzalez and Jason Witten and Antonio Gates, you know, means that he could potentially become the greatest tight end of all time, just from a statistical production standpoint, and certainly should be or could be in that conversation. You know, Gonzo is the oldest tight end we've seen catch more than 80 passes. He caught 83 at age 37 in his final year in Atlanta. Jason Witten came out of retirement to catch 63 passes with the Cowboys in 2019 at age 37. And both of those guys came into the NFL at the age of 21. So similar to Kyle Pitts. So while it's difficult or nearly impossible for me to sit here and project where Kyle Pitts could be 10 to 15 years from now, but when it comes to the potential of what he could be, you know, that's what we're talking about. A guy that could have, you know, 16 or so years of, you know, premier production as a tight end. So when we're talking about what Kyle Pitts' eye level is, right, sort of halfway between the floor and the ceiling. So what is the most likely point that he will definitely get to, or maybe not definitely, but the most likely outcome for where he's going to be, the safest bet, I guess you could say, I put Jimmy Graham. Right. Jimmy Graham was a former basketball player that made the conversion to football in college at Miami. Then very quickly after sort of a kind of redshirt year in New Orleans, became in year two one of the top tight ends in the NFL, largely thanks to the Saints making him the focus of their passing attack for the next several years. And it was basically the Jimmy Graham and Marcus Colston show for those years. And then you had a sprinkling of guys like Darren Sproles and Lance Moore and Kenny Stills and Brandon Cooks in those years. And, you know, I would have to ask Ross Jackson of Locked On Saints for further details on exactly why the marriage between Jimmy Graham and the Saints ended so abruptly after 5 seasons. You know, was it money? Was it attitude? Whatever the case may be, but we saw him get traded to Seattle, and he was still a productive tight end after that point, whether we're talking about his time in Seattle or Green Bay or Chicago, still a dangerous red zone threat because of his ability to win on those fade balls in the end zone, but clearly was not the most dominant tight end in the NFL like we saw when he was in New Orleans for those 4 years years when the offense was tailored around him. And so I use Graham as a comp because I think it shows sort of the range of outcomes depending on what type of offense Kyle Pitts winds up finding himself in under Arthur Smith, based off of whether you have the two dichotomy of Graham in New Orleans when the offense was focused on him and Graham in the other places where the offense wasn't focused on him. And so if you look at the 6 years since Jimmy Graham left New Orleans, you know, he's tied for third among tight ends in terms of touchdowns, fifth in yards, fifth in receptions, still clearly a productive player. But in terms of a per game basis, you know, he's not giving you significantly more over that span of time than what Austin Hooper has given the Falcons over that similar span of games. And it's not to sit here and say that Jimmy Graham doesn't have the ability to be more than that, but, you know, that's the difference between how he is when you focus your offense around him versus just asking him to make plays when you need him to, right? And so you compare what he was during those 4 years of peak production in New Orleans, you know, where he was the most productive tight end in the league. You know, probably that's a little bit of a cheat when it comes to projecting what Kyle Pitts' eye level is going to be. Because, you know, within that range is a guy that can be the most productive tight end in the NFL if Arthur Smith makes the efforts that we're talking about to make him the centerpiece of the offense, versus also a guy that can still be one of the more productive tight ends in the NFL, but isn't a guy that, you know, is scary. And that's what would happen if Arthur Smith doesn't make him the centerpiece of an offense. So I think the thing that Kyle Pitts has going for him is that he's not going to necessarily have teammates calling him soft like Jimmy Graham had in Seattle, or have the quote unquote locker room issues that Graham allegedly had based off of some reports that led to his departure in New Orleans. I feel very confident that Kyle Pitts will be very successful in the NFL as well as in Atlanta. Obviously, durability is an unknown, but so far it's been a non-issue for him in college. And because of the rule changes, ongoing rule changes in the NFL, maybe it won't be as big an issue for Pitts moving forward as we saw with a player like Rob Gronkowski over the last decade. So, you know, I think a lot of that rests on Arthur Smith. A lot of it rests on, you know, so I think ultimately a lot on how good Kyle Pitts becomes rests on Arthur Smith and his play calling. If he just uses him like anybody would use any old tight end, and we're just kind of relying on Kyle Pitts to be this more athletic Jonnu Smith type of player, you know, you'll probably still see him catch, you know, consistently 60 to 75 passes a year. And that probably leads to him, you know, having a couple of Pro Bowl seasons across, you know, a decade long career and going into like two or three Pro Bowls across the next 10 years. And that's still a very good NFL career. But if you're comparing that to, say, what we might see from players like Trey Lance or Justin Fields or Mac Jones, and if those guys wind up leading their respective teams to playoffs most years, you know, you're not going to get anywhere close to the same value from that type of player if that's all Kyle Pitts is going to be to what a, you know, perennial playoff contending team from a quarterback position. So I'm optimistic that we will see Kyle Pitts go beyond that, because I don't believe that the Falcons made him the highest drafted tight end ever and doesn't have a plan to make him the centerpiece of the offense moving forward. So I think we'll probably see a guy that's regularly catching 80, 90, maybe even 100 plus passes a year, and hopefully is one of the most dominant red zone threats in the NFL and regularly catching, you know, 10 to 12 touchdowns a year, if not more. And I think even in a world where Arthur Smith doesn't necessarily emphasize Kyle Pitts in a huge way in the offense, I do think the red zone is going to be a natural way, a natural area where we're going to see Pitts shine regardless, simply because Arthur Smith's offense, without any major changes, is naturally known to feature the tight end in the red zone. Jonnu Smith was the most targeted player in the red zone for the Titans the past 2 years, with Arthur Smith calling plays, with 20% of the Titans' red zone throws being in his direction in 2019 and 2020. Anthony Firkser was third on the team behind A.J. Brown with 9% of red zone throws. And when you throw in other tight ends like Jeff Schwame and Delanie Walker and Michael Pruitt, et cetera, you know, tight ends represent about 38% of the Titans red zone targets. And then if you throw in pass eligible tackles, it pushes it up to 40%. And when you talk about the conversion rate across that position, including those eligible tackles, it was 40.4%. And for the sake of comparison, you look at the past 2 years under Dirk Koetter in Atlanta, Austin Hooper was 11% of the red zone targets. Hayden Hurst was 9%. All tight ends were combined to be about 22%, right? So it's about half as likely to target tight ends in Dirk Koetter than Arthur Smith was. And you had a conversion rate of about 29.7%. So 30% versus 40% in Tennessee. So when you add Pitts, at least in terms of what he projects at the NFL level, that plus ability in the red zone, I think we should be extremely optimistic that the red zone struggles of the Falcons that we've experienced throughout the Matt Ryan era, that has been especially true in the post-2012 era, where the Falcons have been, for the most part, on average, a below average red zone team in 2013 over the last 7-8 years. Pitts has the ability to sort of inherit the mantle from a player like Julio Jones, who I know that's triggering because of ongoing concerns about how much longer Julio is going to play in Atlanta. But I think Pitts has the ability to inherit that mantle as a guy that can be the centerpiece of the offense and could allow for, if most things go according to plan, you know, the Falcons could have this 2-decade-long stretch where they had a Hall of Fame caliber pass catcher on their roster. And when you count sort of the Tony and Julio Jones years, you know, at the beginning of this past decade, and hopefully at least one more year at the beginning of this current decade, where the Falcons have two such Hall of Famers, eventual Hall of Famers on their team catching passes. So when Julio was this guy back in 2011, 2012, we didn't know that he was going to be what he has become. But it was very clear by the end of the 2012 season that he was the guy in Atlanta. And my expectations when it comes to Pitts is I'm not confident that he's going to become the guy in 2021. But my hope is similarly that by the time we get to the end of 2022, Pitts is clearly the guy and hopefully remains so for the next decade. And I know Calvin Ridley is like, what about me, Aaron? And I'm like, if Calvin Ridley is quote unquote just your number two, then I do think, you know, he's going to be a much better number two than what Julio had for the bulk of his career, which was a declining Roddy White and Mohamed Sanu. With Julio, we basically got 2012 and 2013 with him and Roddy, but obviously 2013 was marred by injuries to both of those guys. And we've had the last 3 years with Julio and Ridley, but 2018, you know, Ridley was kind of held back by Sanu's presence. And last year in 2020, we saw Julio injured. So really, we only got that from 2019 with Ridley being sort of comparable to 2012 Roddy. We basically, in terms of Julio's decade-long career, we've only really gotten one or two quote unquote years of peak Julio where he had a legit top end number two wide receiver. If you want to throw in 2019 into that conversation along with 2012, and Ridley to me has like five more peak years left. And obviously I think Pitts has a lot more than that. So hopefully we're going to get like 4 or 5 years of what we saw from Julio and Roddy in 2012 or Julio and Ridley in 2019 with Pitts and Ridley in the future. So, you know, to me, the question, that conversation, and again, that's not necessarily what we're talking about on today's episode, but the question for that conversation is like, who's going to be the third wheel in that conversation? And rather than having a chain moving tight end like we saw with Tony Gonzalez being that in 2012 or Austin Hooper in 2019, you know, ideally you can get more of an explosive wide receiver to sort of be that third wheel. And you drop, say, a player like a Will Fuller, a DK Metcalf, or a Darius Slayton into that type of duo that you already have with Pitts and Ridley, and my God, we're going to be cooking. So when I see the potential of this group of pass catchers for the Falcons, this is something that is potentially special in terms of what is brewing in Atlanta. And I guess the questions are going to be really about what you put around those pieces. You know, who's your quarterback going to be in 5 years? You know, what's your running game going to be like over the next couple of years as you have this, you know, thing cooking up? What's the offensive line going to be? What's the defense going to be? And so it gets back to something I've ranted about before on the pod, which I am less concerned about what Kyle Pitts is and his ability to live up to the potential, and more concerned about how the Falcons answer those other questions over the next couple of years that's going to determine their long-term success in the quote-unquote Kyle Pitts era. So there you guys have it. There is my very long scouting report of Kyle Pitts. And of course, we got more to come on Locked On Kyle Pitts Week tomorrow. We've talked a lot about Kyle Pitts the player, but maybe tomorrow we'll get a little bit more into Kyle Pitts the person with the host of Locked On Gators, Brandon Olson, on tomorrow's episode. And we got more to come later this week in terms of what Kyle Pitts could bring to an NFL offense like Atlanta and his special value from some other guests later on this week. But you know, in addition to tuning in to Locked On Falcons for this Locked On Kyle Pitts week. You know, I got you covered on all things Kyle Pitts, all things Falcons. But of course, who's got you covered for the rest of sports? Well, that's host Peter Bukowski, who now has you covered on the Locked On Today podcast. It's all the sports news that you need every morning in under 20 minutes. So subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So guys, again, appreciate you tuning in for the Sky Report episode. And we got more to come on Locked On Kyle Pitts week. And, you know, if you have any feedback that you want to provide me on anything I talked about on today's episode, of course, you can do so. Hit me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons, Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Appreciate it. Until then.